What's the story with all these drag queen story hours? Got some guys dressed up like women, not like normal women. You know, it's like chorus girls at an Elton John concert, real strange dressed up. And they read stories to kids, and you're supposed to bring your kid to the library, and there's this really unusual person. When I was a kid, it was clowns. People took their kids around clowns. Now it's the.
But not in drag.
But not in drag. Yeah. Now there's adult men and they're dressed. I'm going to put a picture up here. I mean, this is what's going on. Let me see if this will work. Yeah, boom. So it's super glamorized. Like, I don't know any women that walk around dressed like that.
No.
And both of these dudes got beards and makeup on. They like to do that too. Like, just emphasize the irony. I don't know what this is, but it's a big deal. People bring their kids to, you know, they read these books to them. I mean, can these parents not read themselves? Are they not literate? Why do they need to take them to the library and have these dudes read the book?
They don't want to read. No.
I don't know. I mean, can't they say, Alexa, read my child a book? Read them the Aeneid? No, you've got to drive them to the public library where there's a drag queen reading hour. And then these men, let's be honest, they're not there for the book. They're there to look at these exotic costumes and makeup and poofed up crimped hair.
And they're not there for the Aeneid. I don't think that's what's being read.
They're not reading the Aeneid at drag queen hour?
It would take more than an hour, for one thing. And for another thing.
Maybe they're reading the Odyssey.
Yeah.
More action.
Also, might take more than an hour. No, I mean, look, it's important that people understand this because, well, we're going to get into it today, but it turns out to be a major issue, and there was a major debate about it. Between two major conservatives, Sohrab Ahmari and David French, at CUA last week on Thursday, I believe. They're calling it the melee at CUA. And they represent two major points of view within conservatism on what should be done about drag queen story hour. And what you and I are going to talk about today is the fact that there is a legitimate third way. You and I on this show, Taylor, have criticized in harsh terms other types of third ways before, haven't we? And
yeah, I'm not a big fan of the via media.
No. I mean, not usually, or not, but it's not categorically, because in this case, there is an absolute legitimate third way between Frenchism, David French, who says, he throws up his hands and he says, look, this is part of, and he's a good Christian too. He throws up his hands and he says, this is part of the classical liberal tradition. We hate it, but we're supposed to hate it and not do anything about it legally. And on the other hand, Sohrab Ahmari,
Catholic.
No. When we'll talk about why. That why is more important. And then Sohrab Ahmari saying that there should be, he's tried many different theories throughout this 5 or 4 month debate, which eventuated in an actual debate last week. He's tried many theories about how the federal government could get involved. We're going to talk about why it's not the federal government that has the power to get involved. But I don't know if you wanted to pray first or what.
Yeah, we're going to pray. Before we get into the federal government, I want to talk, why is this a popular thing? Why does society want this? Secular society. All right, let us pray. And we're going to pray right now for all the little kids that are in these weird, horrible situations. Kids who are abused, kids who are sexualized, all that. So today's prayer is for the little ones. Nomine Patris et Filii et Spiritus Sancti. Amen. Pater Noster, qui es in Caelis, sanctificetur nomen Tuum, adveniat regnum Tuum, fiat voluntas Tua, sicut in cielo et in terra. Panem nostrum quotidianum da nobis hodie, et dimitte nobis debita nostra, sicut et nos dimittimus debitoribus nostris, et ne nos inducas in tentationem, sed libera nos a malo. Amen.
Amen.
St. Joseph, pray for us.
Pray for us.
Our Lady Guadalupe, pray for us. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Ghost. Amen. By the way, everybody's been asking for help on the Latin. Last night we did a big Latin webinar. It's a lot of fun. And we went through the Our Father, the Hail Mary, the Glory Be, the Oh My Jesus Fatima prayer, and Bless Us, O Lord, table prayer, and I even chanted it. So if you want to see that, go to Dr. Taylor Marshall's channel, and you can watch that Latin webinar. Okay, and while you're here, please share this video on Facebook, Twitter, hit the like button, hit the subscribe button, hit the bell to get notified. And on to the nonsense, the craziness. Now, why, you know, we're going to talk about the legality. We're going to talk about this big debate that just happened. We're going to talk about solutions from a traditional Catholic point of view. We'll talk about government and law and amendments and all that. But before we do, I just want to raise the question. Why would governments want a society that's drug addicted, sex addicted, porn addicted? And Tim, you and I have talked about before in Aristotle, Plato, and it comes in, of course, to the Catholic tradition. It's in the Old Testament. Mm-hmm. We humans, we have a soul, a rational soul. There's an intellect, there's a will, and then there's your passions. And with original sin, these passions are all going crazy, they're all messed up. That's called concupiscence. Tyrants love chaos because they can take over. And tyrants want chaos in every single citizen so that they can enslave them.
Right.
And the way that you do... See, nowadays you don't just, you know, hop off a boat and start putting chains on people. Nowadays what you do is you just give them porn, give them weed, give them morphine, and they become slaves of their passions, and then you can control them very easily. Powerful people in the world want to control mass populations. And the way they do this is through our passions. So, as I talk about in Infiltration and the Alta Vendita, those principles apply in the church and outside the church. They're going to go after the kids. That's the future generation. Those are the future earners. Those are the future people, the voters, the populace. And they're going to get those kids enslaved to their passion early on.
Right.
Food, sex, drugs. That's how you get it done.
That's right.
And you make them just sit on couches consuming porn, eating food, ruining their lives, and then you can control them. And all these social justice warriors and all that, this is how they grew up. Sometimes abused, placed in bad situations, latchkey kids, and they've learned to be enslaved to their passions. The Catholic says, don't be enslaved to your passions. Master the passions. Get in a state of grace. Be baptized. Go to confession. Put your reason over your passions. When you have a society like that, you have a virtuous society, it's very difficult for tyrants to take over.
That's right.
There is true liberty in such a society.
Right. And see, this is a really important point. People are out there wrestling with this idea of liberty. The natural, what you're talking about represents the external restraints on liberty, the external restraints that can be sort of imposed by culture or government on a civil society, a group of individuals. And the kinds that you're talking about of external restraints on liberty will eventually kind of get into the host organism and through addiction or bad habit. I'm not one of these guys that calls every bad habit an addiction, but you get someone, you know, connected or someone's, a society of people connected with porn, connected with drugs. And they do become addicted or almost addicted. And now it becomes a kind of internal restraint on their own liberty. And they're no longer interested in, it's no longer a thrill to read a good book about government, you know, Alexis de Tocqueville. People aren't going to read Alexis de Tocqueville or Montesquieu or any of the great political thinkers of the past, Aristotle or Robert Bellarmine when they can go get high or when they're addicted to pornography. So it's a very real external become internal self-restraint on people's own liberties, and tyrants don't like it. Now, the important thing is that people are saying, people on the Catholic right and on the Protestant right now are responding in this era to all of these abused liberties. You're talking about abused liberties. And they're saying, maybe liberty isn't good. I just changed my Facebook flag in the background, my Twitter flag in the background to a Gadsden that represents the fact that liberty is Catholic and it's good. It represents free will. Now, the Protestants have always struggled with this in a different way because they don't, theologically, they don't believe, most of them, in full free will. Today's not a show on that, so we won't get all the way into it. But I've seen lots of populists on the right over the last month say things like, "Oh, well, we have to pick between liberty and order," and I pick order. This is what produces populism. This is what produced the populism of early 1930s Germany.
Can we camp on that term populism? Because I just don't even know what it means anymore.
All right, let me give you a definition.
It's every single day in every single article.
It's called, but there's something to it. It's not just fake news. Let's give a definition for it. So it's moral and cultural conservatism mixed with statism, right? Mixed with a huge scope of government. Moral and cultural conservatism. As opposed to economic conservatism, with basically large statist government, meaning it's being enforced. This is what happened.
Yeah, but I mean, are you going to say because we had blue laws, that's populist?
No, because blue laws don't, and this is what we're going to get into. This is like the perfect mm-hmm. set of questions. I mean, so it's good to pepper with questions, interrogate the proposition. Blue laws are local. Right. So by definition, in America, there's this whole robust intellectual tradition that goes back to literal Catholic ideas. I'm selling extra ideas that aren't even quite in my book, by the way, Catholic Republic, which is about this. But there's actually an easier sell that I found to show that you know, the ideas that went into the U.S. Constitution were mainly Magna Carta, were mainly the ancient English Constitution, both of which were utterly Catholic. I mean, were explicitly Catholic because they're before 1517. And these ideas of having limited government was all centered around an ancient idea in Latin, no surprise, because it's largely Catholic in its origin, called imperium in imperio, an empire within an empire. And so you asked about blue laws or something like these. Do these represent what I said before, moral conservatism plus statism? No, because in the American tradition, in the ancient English tradition, in the Magna Carta tradition, the Catholic tradition, it's not statism. If it's locally chosen legislation, or in America, state chosen legislation, statism means in our case the federal government, right?
Right.
It means the outside empire, because we do have imperium. Okay,
so just to cut to the chase, populism is referring to what we would call federal enforcement.
Right.
Right. Got it.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Got it. National enforcement, where you're like, hey. Let's
use this. You have to use this textbook in name a city. Washington, D.C. says use this textbook.
Right.
Yeah.
Or alcohol is bad in this Puritan nation. Right. That we once believed that. And we don't agree that it's a per se evil, obviously, because we're Catholic and we're Aristotelian. But pretend, let's go with that. So alcohol is bad for premise number one. Premise number two in America was, this should be enforced literally, right? Federally. And because it was, you attempt to enforce something federally, really, we're going to get into that. The enumerated powers for the federal government people are nil. They're so few. They are very close to what Thomas listed as what should be the federal powers. They should be for paying the, you know, taxes, for paying the salaries of the governors of the city, and prosecuting wars. And that's it. It's a very limited, if you look at the Article 1, Section 8 of the U.S. Constitution, it is utterly limited, the powers that are enumerated for the federal government. There's 16, 17 powers, depending on how you count it, and most of them are super specific things like building post roads. And then because of the 10th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, it specifically says, the very constitutional idea, that all the powers not enumerated are held, the legislating powers are held by the state legislatures. And this gives you what we call federalism, right? Federalism is an empire within an empire, the really strong, robust lawmaking purview, the really, really muscular legislative power resides with the states. But states can legislate differently. That's the beauty. And this, see, this is what I think a lot of traditional Catholics and populist right-wingers don't understand. This is what you had in the Holy Roman Empire, right? This is what you had in all of the best working governments of the past that did, to some extent, legislate morality. They did so on the basis of your local area was really what decided things like blue laws, since you brought it up, right? That legislated morality. The federal government, the national government, does not have the constitutional power, nor do we believe as Catholics that it's moral, because of a proposition called subsidiarity, for the national government to be legislating morality. For saying, here's the rules for 300,000 people. It's not set up that way. Catholic philosophy rejects it. It's intrinsically evil, according to Pius XI, for there to be an overlord that says, you know, for 300 million people, here's the case. That is the job of fathers. And then if fathers can't do it, you kick it up a notch, maybe the church. If then you kick it up a notch if you can't be done at the level of the church, to city, state, etc. That's what a blue law is. And it's the states are, as Scalia would always call them, the forums of experimentation. Right? So is that...
That's good.
I mean, it's really important that people understand that. That comes from Magna Carta, you know, 1215, very Catholic. See, everyone laughs at me when I say, oh, America's crypto-Catholic. Okay, well, these guys were reading Magna Carta, and they were reading something called the Ancient English Constitution, which Bernard Bailyn says goes back to, like, 900. So, way even before the Magna Carta. And you can't tell when the Ancient English Constitution dates to, because it's not written. It's an oral tradition. But it's well before 1517. So these are Catholic ideas. It's not debatable. Also, you know who truly was the most influential single thinker on the neo-Whig Americans, Jefferson and Adams? It was the man. They were responding to Robert Filmer, the hated Robert Filmer, the guy that wrote a very, very infamous text called Patriarcha. And Robert Filmer was responding explicitly to none other than Cardinal Robert Bellarmine. Patriarcha was a defense of the divine right of kings, which also meant, and I'm not anti good monarchies, but it's one of the acceptable forms of government, so is a republic. Robert Bellarmine, representing really the best of the Catholic political tradition, the most mature of the Thomist Aristo political tradition, robustly had countered the divine right of kings, and he had done so in the terms of what we would note as constitutional republicanism. And so when the Whigs like John Locke and the neo-Whigs like Jefferson picked up on this argument between Filmer and Bellarmine, they took the side of Bellarmine, right? Because they hated Robert Filmer. They hated the divine right of kings. They hated Toryism. They were Whigs. Was their opposite. So it was something like the enemy of my enemy is my friend. They didn't cite Bellarmine, so much so that Algernon Sidney, one of the Whigs, got accused of plagiarizing him. But this was what was in the water in America when they're looking at Magna Carta, Catholic. They're looking at the ancient English Constitution, Catholic ideas, subsidiarity. They called it federalism. And they were reading Cardinal Bellarmine. So does it, people have to understand, before we even look at drag queens and reading hours and scopes of government that influence, what, you know, why in the world would even a single parent let their kid want their kid to be around drag queens reading? You can literally go in the British version of the story hour. There are 35 chapters in America, by the way. In the British version, you can
35
you can
chapters go, of what?
Drag queen reading hour, DQRH.
DQRH. 35.
There are 35 of these.
Yeah, I mean, let's camp out there for a little bit. Tim, you're hanging out with Steph. It's Saturday, 9:30 a.m. You're just kind of getting your third cup of coffee. Kids are running all around. You know what it's like. We've been there every single Saturday. And so I was like, hey, honey, why don't you go do something with the kids? You know, let's get out of the house. And you're like, hey, I saw a flyer up at the library when I was there. I was like, it's Drag Queen Saturday. There's a couple drag queens up at the library. I'm going to take the kids. We're going to go hear the Aeneid or whatever. You know?
That would be a big step up. But
it would be a step up. Hey, they're reading Montesquieu to the kids in drag this weekend. We should go check that out.
Spirit of the
Lost. So, you drive. You got the kids in the car. You know, they had their breakfast. I think y'all eat cereal at your home. Everybody's got their cereal and their milk. They're good to go. You pull up. There's some Catholics outside. This was a story just yesterday. Over at LifeSite, there's protesters praying the rosary outside Missouri Drag Queen Story Hour. So you get out of the car and there's some people praying the rosary, like they don't like the drag queens. And you're like, hey kids, don't talk to those people. Let's go inside because it's about to begin. You go in, there's a couple guys dressed in drag. Now I've noticed when they dress in drag, it's not how our wives dress.
No.
It's sort of like you take the Village People mixed with Gone with the Wind and 80s and Elton John.
You've given this some thought because that's very accurate.
I have. And it's interesting. There's a trans person. I don't know quite the right terminology. I'll say a trans person who sometimes visits a coffee shop where I go to write, and she dresses in like period costumes, like Gone with the Wind or like a 1940s woman with gloves, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Stuff you only see like in old movies, and it's interesting that it draws so much attention, but it's a idealized, it's a dramatic costume, you know. It's not like, you know, your wife has like a cute dress on, or you know
just a sundress.
Yeah, like what women wear. You know, it's something that you could only find in backstage in a costume area, right? And you see the same thing here. I mean, I hate to even put it up, but here's like a sample. You know, so the hair is like out to here. It's a bright purple, big chunky jewelry. Furs, different colored hair, the eyebrows that go like halfway up the forehead.
Yeah, they're always the surprised eyebrows.
Just surprised. Whoa, and then make, and it's just, and then sometimes I like to mix in the beard just for the shock value. Mm-hmm. It's a very strange. So you come in, and then your kids see these people, these guys, and they start reading the story in deep voices, but they look like girls. And you're sitting there as a parent. You're a social justice warrior version of Tim Gordon. Tim Gordon gone so wrong. And what are you thinking in that moment as a social justice warrior parent? This is so cool.
Right.
And you're thinking, man, I hope my son grows up to wear a dress and read in a library. Or you're thinking, man, this is really helping these guys out, that they have our kids as an audience. It's helping their self-esteem. I don't understand what's going on.
I think
I'm a simple man. I don't understand. Parts. You think it's both of those?
Yeah, I think there's a do-gooderism component to it. I mean, we didn't talk about this ahead of time, but I think there's a, hey, we're helping these guys out. You know, we're giving them an audience. Other people are so
we're giving them our kids.
We're giving them our kids. It's like a, you know, Baal worship, right? We're feeding them our kids to abuse and warp their minds. It's disgusting. It really is vile. I mean, it's really disgusting. And this is where, you know, French and the Frenchists are just not, they're not giving due credit to how vile this is. But yeah, and then there's the component of, look, these are crazy leftists. So the parents that would have their kids here, you could see pictures of them. You could see a video of one with a drag queen in England teaching this kid how to twerk, how to move his hips up and down.
Yeah, to be
and
a
the
stripper.
Parents there, the to parents be a stripper. Like doing, to be a drag, whatever, gay and how worse, come, stripper.
This is kind of sexist, Tim. It's all drag it's queens. Why are there no drag kings?
That's true.
Why aren't there? Maybe there are. Are there women dressed up like lumberjacks?
It's not as shocking for some reason.
I mean, what, is there a woman and she's dressed up like a king? The crown,
yeah.
Big cape.
Yeah, we're supposed to be the sexist, and we're pointing that out. We want equality.
I'm not actually wanting someone to produce this. I'm just saying, why is it drag queen?
We're having fun. I want gender equality in my drag queens and drag kings. I'll say it. This is the most important issue facing America now.
Yeah,
is we need. I mean,
equality on the library reading.
It's not
gonna,
shocking.
50%, 50-50. So you need women dressed as men.
Right.
You know, like a lumberjack.
Right.
The big fake beard on. Maybe it's like a fake, you know, crazy, like a purple beard. Plaid shirt, like a prop of a big axe.
Right.
Some big clunky boots. Like, hey, it's kids. Not as... Tonight we're going to read Good Night, Moon. Everybody gather around. Night. Or like dress up like Chuck Norris. A woman comes in dressed up like Chuck Norris.
But then... See, here's the thing. A woman could never be as shocking as a man can be as a woman. I mean, a man can grow a beard, and that's bothersome stuff. That's circus stuff at best. Mm-hmm. That's circus stuff when a man has a beard that's otherwise dressed as a woman. But a woman goes in, she's like, hi, I'm Chuck Norris. It's just like, okay, Chuck, what happened to you, buddy? You take an estrogen treatment. I mean, you shaved, which is, I don't even want to think about Chuck Norris shaving. That's like the stuff of nightmares. He's Chuck Norris. He always has that beard. He has since Enter the Dragon 2 or whatever.
That's true. I never thought of that. He does have a beard all the time.
Well, he doesn't. I mean, he's not Chuck Norris without it. I think he dies.
I don't know. I think I've seen a clean shaven Chuck.
He can't die, but. Have you?
No, there's a clean-shaven Chuck.
Well, Walker, Texas Ranger.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. He's clean. Which is filmed here in Texas. Just want everyone to know that.
Yeah. It wouldn't be Walker, Oklahoma Ranger, you know, if he wasn't. No, that's true. He's clean. I mean, so I'm wrong about that. But to me, he's not Chuck without the beard. Nevertheless, what the drag queens seem to like that I think you're commenting on is the plumage, the bright colors, the, you know, being festooned, the pageantry. They like the cartoonish element, the overstated
it's
element
cartoonish.
In females. Good. It is cartoonish. Yeah, I mean that's what they get out of. They actually are the ones that objectify females, I think, the worst.
Exactly.
Again, yeah, it's like this is not what it is to be female. My wife.
Can you imagine if it, you're like, hey, Steph, let's go on a date, and she's getting ready. She comes out, she dressed like RuPaul.
Yeah, right.
Like, what's going on?
Why are you dressed like the little girls?
Why do you have 12-inch heels and hair this big? You'd be like, what's going on, Steph? Why are you dressed like that? Kind of weird.
Wait, is this a dude dressed as my wife? A cartoonish version? No, that's how little girls, if you say, okay, this is your one day you can try on mommy's dresses and makeup, they come out dressed like a drag queen, right?
No, I don't think so. I don't think they would come out with makeup and...
Well, I mean, if you let a little girl put on, I think I can't remember which little girl we let. Okay, put on heels. They put on mommy's heels. They look too. They don't fit quite right. The makeup's all overdone. It's like clown paint.
Right. You know, it's like a guy tried to dress up like a girl. I mean,
well, I mean, the little girls can't wear a beard. It's a little kid's. There's something Freudian about it. I truly believe this. I'm not even trying.
Yeah, there's something really sick about this.
Yeah, if a little kid tried to dress like what they think a girl is, and obviously these are you know, gender dysphoric.
I'm just gonna pull a no card on that because my girls will dress up and, you know, they'll get mom's clothes and shoes on. They don't look like RuPaul. I'm sorry, my kids. They kind of try to dress like their mom.
Your little girls are a little older though, right? I mean, if you let a 5-year old, I'm just saying, I'm not saying a 5-year old, it's not as perverse. If a little 5-year old girl, you said, here's some makeup, here's a dress, have at it. I'm just going to say they have none of the restraint, the artfulness of, there's
pulling
no
it together.
Forget the analogy, but there's no artfulness, there's no feminine restraint to, I want to look beautiful, but I want to do so in an understated way. You know, what you were saying about your wife and, you know, one's wife, never begin a sentence, your wife, but one's wife in like a little cotton sundress or something like that. It's a hot day. I live in the desert here. It's very feminine. Mm-hmm. It's beautiful, but I mean, this is not the kind of stuff drag queens are wearing. There's an overstated cartoonish element to the entire, I was going to say afternoon, but it must be morning, where they're doing DQRH. And they're, you know, at some of these events, they're actually engaging the kids more overtly. Let's be honest here. This is pedo grooming. This is pederastic grooming, mm-hmm. except it's actually pedophiliac grooming because the kids are very young. These are not 15-year-old kids. It's grooming. And it's happening at the municipal level. And sometimes actual sex comes up as a topic, right? I mean, one of the things I always say, it's one of my rules for retrogrades, my 50 rules for retrogrades, is the left has a thin skin and a strong stomach. And I say, therefore, the right should have thick skin, but a weak stomach. They're you know, school marms when it comes to, you know, the left created this situation in hospitals where they come out and they make sure, you know, they're going to tell me, a responsible, you know, head of household, I love my family. They're going to come out and make sure that I buckled the, you know, the new car seat into the car the right way. It's statism. This is why I hate statism, folks.
I'm talking about when the baby's born. They come out
when the baby's born.
Let's make sure you know how to.
Dude, yeah, there's it's always a mental. It's always a war between me and the nurses. The 2 or 3 or 4 days Steph's in the hospital, a bunch of nurse ratchets, right? From Cuckoo's Nest. And it's like, they're basically like state-run hospitals. It's a nightmare. And they're lecturing you, and it's all the leftism. It's all the leftism, you know, because the medical establishment is very left, very culture of death. And they're all looking at us funny, and every doctor that passes through the room, every nurse is like, you shouldn't have any more C-sections, blah, blah, blah. They hate us, right? They hate us. We are the anti people that they want to see in the hospital. And then to cap it all off, I'm always mad. I'm always like biting my lip hard for 2 days or 3 days. And then to cap it all off, they give you the lecture about the car seat. So they're like lecturing school marms. They're like, you know, a certain kind of, on the one hand, a certain kind of like parish councilwoman.
Susan.
Let's call her Susan.
Let's call her Susan from the parish. Yeah. By the way, can I make a public service announcement? Yeah, Susan from the parish on Twitter is not me, and it's not Tim. It's not Steph.
Nope. None of us.
I don't know who it is. I'm trying to figure it out. I got clues.
I talk to Susan a lot on
DMs. Do you know who it is?
I can't, I don't know exactly who it is. It's no one that anyone would recognize, but we talk as, as fellow sons, and well, I'm a son, she's a daughter of the church. we talk real, you know, after the baby was born, but
yeah, so people think it's us. I just want people to know it's not us.
It's not us. Literally not. I mean,
Susan from the parish.
I was chatting with her last night on DM.
Oh, no, you were, you're talking to her.
Yeah. Unless it's you funning me, you know, then no, I don't think so.
What if it was like Bishop Barron? He's just punking us.
That, That would capture my respect, that. Right? I'm not just saying it. If it was Bishop Bear punking us, I'd be like, I'm gonna give this guy another look.
Props, yeah, yeah. So Susan from the parish is a Twitter account. It's comedic. She pretends to be a boomer, Novus Ordo, Purell pumping Eucharistic minister, and she has a lot of humorous
great platitudes
satire on Twitter. If you don't follow Susan from the parish, but because very so much of her stuff humorous. Tracks our stuff, people think it's us, but Susan from the parish is not us. We have no connection with who, I don't even know who this person is.
It's an idea I wish I'd had. It's something my mind thinks like that, but I'm trying to take credit.
It'd be funny if whoever it is had a funny old lady voice, we could do an interview.
No, funny. I know. I'd be down to have Susan on. I think we should consider it. I'm actually for that. I'll bet you Susan would like it. If you want, I could. No, but okay. So leftists are half like Susan, the fake Susan, and the other half like half like Tisking school marm, that is, in a leftist form.
Like, make sure you put the caps back on the markers.
Yeah. Yeah. Except not because of the markers, because of what we need from the markers, but because of the environment, right? Put the caps on the markers. It's releasing, it's destroying the ozone layer. And then half, they shift into school pervert, you know, disgusting school pervert mode. And you'll always notice that.
That's the other thing I was thinking. Okay, you're a drag queen, dude, and you're like partying Friday night. And you're like, man, I gotta turn in early tonight. You're like, what? It's only 11 o'clock. And you're like, I got drag queen story hour. I'm like, oh, you're on duty tomorrow. You're doing the reading. Yeah, reading. I'm reading a book. I gotta wake up actually at 6 a.m. because it's gonna take me 3 hours to put all the stuff on. The kids are
right.
The kids and the parents are expecting me to be fully dragged out. It's gonna take me. I'm like, oh yeah, I get it, man. I get it. Well, man, it's good to see you. Hope everything goes well tomorrow. And you're like, thanks.
Peace, bro.
Peace. Peace out. And then he wakes up at 6 a.m. He's like, oh, I'm so tired. You know, so he pours his coffee. He's in his, like, maybe he's in a multicolored bathrobe or something. And he's like, all right, time to get out the hair dryers and the makeup.
And just another Saturday.
Yeah, just starting to. Got to get this put together. You know?
Come on, it's for the kids. It's for the kids. Yeah.
I mean, what if a drag queen? What if a drag queen showed up for story day and he was just like dressed in like a muumuu and flip flops? Like, I just couldn't pull it together.
Does that still count as drag? Yeah. Just like a little. He threw together a quick little mini skirt and a tube top. You know? Sorry. And I
and a ball cap. Ball cap with a ponytail.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Hey, that's like, sorry. Drag. The parents are like, what is this? I woke up early for Drag Queen Story Hour. And this
you're in
is
a
what...
mini skirt and pink flip flops.
Yeah.
But come on, this isn't a run to Walmart. Yeah. You get yourself in
this
full
is
drag.
Story
Does that
hour.
Count as drag? Is that drag? If a man just wears like woman's like attire that she'd wear running to Target, like, is that like, still drag?
Yeah.
I'm asking.
Like
literally.
Sweats.
Like, or does it.
New Balance shoes and like a cute t-shirt or something.
Yeah.
You know, is that drag?
You just called it a cute t-shirt. I just thought I'd make fun of you. it's a good question. Because, I mean, like you said, your little equation you did, I forget exactly how you pieced it out at the beginning. That was quite.
Oh, it was apt. 80s, Gone with the Wind.
That was the good part.
80s.
Drag. Oh, yeah. You said something about Elton John.
Elton John. There's a fourth piece of it. I can't. Oh, YMCA. You said
costume. Yeah.
You take YMCA, the 80s, Gone with the Wind, and an Elton John concert from the 80s.
Right.
Whatever that would look like.
We know.
That's what the drag queen goes for. That's the look.
Yeah, so does it count if they're just a Target run, cute T-shirt?
Target run.
You heard it first. R. Marshall.
Mom to Walmart run.
Mom to Walmart. Pink flip flops. Whatever.
I'm wondering. I mean, if you were a social justice warrior parent and you wake up, you know, you're one kid, and you're like, it's story time, and the kid's probably ticked. He has to go to this.
Oh,
it's like
sucks.
Going to school. Yeah, it's like going to school, and then you show up, and it's just a dude. And yeah, he's wearing like shorts in a sweatshirt that has like his alma mater on it in a ponytail.
Right, exactly.
You're like,
Yeah,
man, we
we're.
woke up for this. We wanted some pageantry.
Yeah, we came for the costumery, sir, madam,
All right,
thank no,
well,
sir.
I want to turn our focus to a correction of this, and I want to go to the debate. I'm not real familiar with the debate. I know we got two voices representing how we deal with this in our society, whether it's Europe, Canada, America, and the answers. And then you felt there was a deficiency in this debate. And so why don't you set
Absolutely.
up the two voices in the debate and then give the Tim Gordon solution or recommendation for how we as Americans can address and correct Drag Queen Story Hour.
Yeah, it's important because it's not just DQRH. It's become the headliner issue that represents this important one-off that's happening in American conservatism, really the last 3, 4 years, between the so-called classical liberals like David French, National Review, the direction that magazine has unfortunately taken, versus the so-called post-liberals. And there are many, many traditional Catholics in the post-liberal camp, a la Soe Rabbi Mari. He's actually an actual practicing Catholic of, I think, traditionalist bent, as far as I know, in the
Is he
post-liberal
tratty?
camp.
Is he tratty?
I don't know if he's outright tratty. He lives in Manhattan, but yes, he's with the
You can
trads on
be
all
tratty
these
in
social
Manhattan.
issues.
There's some,
Technically,
yeah.
technically. But yeah, that's so he and I've talked to Saurabh. He's a good guy. I've never talked to David French, but this is really important because the issues with classical liberals are basically they have a few things right. So do the post-liberals. The classical liberals have, in many cases, the premises of American government decently correct, but they come to the wrong conclusions, like David French. They come to the conclusion that, and David French is a good Christian. He's not just, some of them will just sell you this. They don't really care about Christianity or the faith or morals of Christianity at all. And they're kind of just saying, procedure, procedure. We have to stick to the laws. We have to stick to governmental minimalism, which again, that's not, I don't believe that's wrong. This is their real emphasis. But they have some premises wrong because they think that classical liberalism emanates from John Locke and Algernon Sidney, much as we were all taught in middle school. John Locke and Algernon Sidney cannot fully embrace the principles of limited government because they don't understand this whole balance of liberty versus order. But in this kind of perverted way, through John Locke rather than Robert Bellarmine, who can fully articulate why liberty is good, why liberty can square with order, etc., why small government is good. In their kind of descended way, they get it right. It's John Locke rather than Robert Bellarmine, but they get still, 80% of these ideas sort of correct. Nevertheless, they come to the wrong conclusions. Like David French says, "So, Rob, you really think this is the big issue in America today? Drag Queen's reading hour?" And so Mari's like, "This is a big deal, dude." And he's right. So post
Big deal.
liberals are right. It's a big deal. I mean, this is pedo grooming. These are municipal funds. This is a library is an arm of the municipal government, right? Of city government, which is an arm of state government. So this is not just something that's happening. David French almost embarrassingly kept just saying this is an exercise of free speech. It's a First Amendment issue. No, it is not. This is a public building. Remember, free. We're going to talk about constitutional principles that make this argument French kept making ridiculous. There are a number of them. I do want to get them in.
Well, hold on.
First,
I don't think real quick you've even said you said what the debate is on.
so the debate
What's the
is on
debate?
it's whether or not this issue should be le whether it should be whether it can be outlawed. French
Drag
agrees with
Queen
Saurabh
Story
Amari.
Hour.
Yeah,
Can we as
can
American make it illegal? That's the debate.
Yeah. Can it be made illegal or should it be made illegal? And unfortunately, see, I thought David French, Sober Marius, yes and yes. Well, that's the trick. See, this is what me and Sorb were talking. I sent him my book. I was trying to prep him up for this argument, for this debate. And there was talk of a 4 or 5 part debate happening at Notre Dame. And I'd been informally invited with Pat Dineen from Notre Dame by another professor. And then also French and Amari. I'd still love to see that happen because there's so many lacunae in the CUA debate as it happened last Thursday. I thought Amari was going to say yes and yes. Should this be outlawed? He definitely says yes, it should. And can it be under the current constitutional regime? Yes. I don't think he believes it can be under this. He's right.
So that's
switched.
Your criticism. You agree it should be outlawed. He says in our current situation, we can't. You say there is a way.
Yeah, but it's even one. Yeah, almost. But he says, let's just do it federally through. He didn't know how. French gave him a soft pitch he could have swung at. I was screaming at my iPad when I was watching this, like, just say the 10th Amendment. He didn't do it. So he said the only way we could really do it is maybe through, he said, some local ordinances. But French was like, what do you mean? How would this work? And he couldn't answer. But over the summer, when this debate was carrying on through Twitter and through published articles back and forth, he kept saying basically federal power should do it. This is the populist position. The federal government right. should squelch all liberty. Liberty's bad. Order's good. This is the Nazi regime 1930s thing where the big central government comes in and whacks all the moles. Maybe they're at first vicious moles that are being whacked. But this is really the most frequent mode of his argument. Whereas French not only says, no, it can't happen under any current constitutional structures, which is wrong, because there's something called federalism enshrined in the 10th Amendment that all of the non-enumerated powers reside in the states or the people. And when they say the states, they mean the several state legislatures. And there's something called the police power. It has nothing to do with police officers. It's the ability to regulate on health, safety, welfare, and morals. And the state police power is used differently in the 50 several states. But in a state now, Amari's probably going to have to get out of New York. I told him this. I was like, bro, I got to get out of California. You got to get out of New York. Because if we're going to talk a little bit about the robbing of state rights, the legislature, by the Congress, by the national legislature, and how this has happened really since the Civil War. It's really Lincolnianism. It's all bad. The federal government has been trying for the last 100 years to rob states of the police power. But there's nothing on the books that would prevent us from going and saying, if you live in Utah or you live in Wyoming, some really, really conservative state that doesn't have a hint of blue in it, this will be fine. You're going to be okay. It's going to be illegal in your entire state. See, French was saying not only is it there's no constitutional structures which would enable the banning of DQRH, but he was even insinuating, as much as he hates it, because he is a Christian, he was saying it's evil, but he's saying we should have evils that are allowed. He's saying, look, he kept repeating this line. The only really bad thing is not having a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. He's using the infinite fallacy, right? Yeah. Where it's like, well, that's true. I don't disagree. But that doesn't mean that there aren't discernible, appreciable distinctions within moral theology.
This is something that I'm really growing to appreciate. I brought it with me. Let's have a little storybook moment, Tim, shall we?
Sure.
I'm reading this book, Roberto de Matteis, Apologia for Tradition. It came out this year, 2019. I thought, wow, Roberto de Matteis has been busy writing because he also has this book, which came out on Angelica, which I highly recommend.
Right.
All right, you need both of these. But last night as I was reading this, I realized this book actually came out in 2011, and it was meant to be a postscript to his book on Second Vatican Council. As you can see, I'm a big-time Roberto De Matei fan. He talks about, he doesn't use the word heresy, but he talks, I'm going to call it the heresy of catacomb Christianity. And he's very much against this. And this is one of the things I'm really learning from Roberto De Matei, and that is Catholicism has never been content to be catacomb Christianity. That is, let the state do whatever it's going to do. We're just going to have our personal relationship with Jesus underground in a catacomb.
Right.
Roberto De Matei says that is not Catholicism. That is not Christianity. Okay, so it sounds to me that French, I didn't watch the debate, but that's what French is kind of gravitating towards. Mm-hmm. You know, let's just kind of shrug our shoulders and keep praying. And Roberto De Matei says, no, there's always the call for the social kingship of Jesus Christ over every single society on earth.
Absolutely.
And I like that. I like that. He says, even in our current crisis, we can't just shrug our shoulders and say, well, the Holy Spirit will work it out some way. He says, no, we have to be church militant. We have to always fight. We are always trying to convert the next Constantine, the next right. Charlemagne. It's always on the game plan. So it sounds to me that French isn't a Catholic, is he?
I don't. That's just what I was looking at right okay. now. I think he talks like a strong Protestant with this mm-hmm. fallen view of sin. Yeah, mm-hmm. I'll look it up right now. Go on.
Okay. So yeah, I like, so Storybook Hour. I would encourage everyone to pick up this new book, Apologia for Tradition. It's very short. You right. can read it in a couple settings. And the first half of it, which I've already read, is just sort of a history of papal scandal.
Right.
And he just, you know, he goes from the Arian crisis all the way up through Pius the 10th. And he just looks at all these crazy popes and things that went on and deposed popes and anti-popes and schisms and heresy and all that, and traces it up to the modern day. So it's a quick, short, good book, and it's against right. catacomb Catholicism, which right. is a good term.
It is a good term. No, and what's an even better term, less catchy, is the social kingship of Christ. Like, mm-hmm. so this is the most missed point. This is why I'm not just failing to deliver on a promise I made at the beginning of this show here. It is a third way. So the classical liberals, to get back to it, who posit a kind of economic conservatism, which I'm not against, but they also mix it with a moral and cultural indifferentism based on mm-hmm. catacomb Christianity.
Yes.
Based on just recede and let our economic conservatism win the day, a limited scope of government, which I also like, win the day. This is wrong, and it produces what Milo Yiannopoulos calls Frenchism, David Frenchism, where he's always against. He actually comes out against strong culture wars, like Sorbo Mari. But you can't throw all your weight, if you understand the Catholic political tradition, how the social kingship of Christ worked even in the Holy Roman Empire. You can't come out all for Sorbo Mari. Because this guy understands, and this side of the debate understands federalism no better than David French. So federalism does not mean that neither states nor the federal legislatures, because it's imperium in imperio, it's a Magna Carta concept, neither the state legislatures nor the federal legislature, the Congress, can legislate morality. That's what David French and the classical liberals think, and they're wrong. On the other hand, you have Sorbo Mari, who says the federal government can and should, and this is the post-liberal point of view, the federal government should come out in, like Nazi Germany in the early 30s, squelch all these vices in society. The federal government should do it. Wrong. I can't get behind that.
Let me throw an objection there. I'm curious how you'd answer it, Tim. So I'm thinking of when, you know, the Emperor Justinian came along. They did ban a lot of things top down. Gladiatorial games, crucifixions, I think even certain forms of blasphemy. You for or against that?
Well, that, now this is a sliding scale. The federal government does have, this is where we're going. We're going toward the Civil War question, Lincolnianism. I wanted to go there anyway. It's a sliding scale, but the idea of imperium in imperio is that literally it has for the federal government to regulate on a field of legislation. It has to be in Article 1, Section 8. It's beautiful.
I'm not talking about our Constitution. I'm just saying, as a Catholic, okay, so you and I are, you know, do the Wayne's World thing, like we go to a different place, right? And we're talking to Justinian, and talking he's like, fruit. Hey, Tim, I need your advice on this. Should I just ban all gladiatorial games? There's just one province out there. And they did some local subsidiarity and some polling, and they want to keep gladiatorial games out in Antioch. Everywhere else is against them. Should I just go ahead and put the hammer down on Antioch and ban the games?
No. I mean, I
you think say no.
More, I say most moral issues are questions of subsidiarity. I take Catholic teaching very seriously. Go
even
read.
If it's an intrinsic evil.
Well, I guess I wasn't thinking of what you're talking about. With intrinsic evils, you can have a conversation as to whether or not. Look, the question. Okay, that's a good question. The Catholic question for Pius XI's teaching, which has been absorbed into the magisterium fully, subsidiarity. This is the definition. It is evil for a higher order of government to take over a legislating purview when a lower order of government is capable of doing it. So Pius XI does not make this a function of the degree of evil we're talking about. This is even the question with slavery. Slavery is also an intrinsic evil, like, I guess, gladiatorial murder. And so it doesn't matter. The question does not hang on the degree of the evil. The question hangs on the competence of the lower legislative sphere, the closer
sphere. Let me get this straight. So you say to Justinian, no, let it go through the courts in Antioch. We wait 3 years. Antioch rules. Gladiatorial games, murders are still on the books. You're saying Justinian should not come in and trump it. He should let it lie.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a little difficult and anachronistic to do because there also was, I don't know all the legislative powers. It's a prudential call. At the time, I mean, the emperor also had a larger purview of governance than, say, the equivalent. What's the equivalent in our three-branch government?
Yeah,
the president.
Executive.
So I wouldn't want. I'm saying this as an American. I would not want the president coming in. This is not the proper sphere for executive orders. There's a guidebook. There's a rule book. A rule book, when you stick to it, works. But yeah, I mean, basically, this is all going to what if the lower sphere of government is not coming up with the right answer.
Let's say California mandates drag queen story hour 2 times a year in every public school.
Right. So
can the federal government come in and trump that?
Yeah. See, that's the point. No,
that's the big,
our constitutional system. It can't, it cannot, it should not. Even if it's, let's say DQRH is an intrinsic evil. I'm fine with that. Just for the sake of argument. So there's no slipknot out the other end. Yeah, let's say I think it's an intrinsic evil. No, the 50 state legislatures do have the competence to rule on this, whether or not they rule the right way. And this is why imperium in imperio, going back to before Magna Carta, very Catholic subsidiarity, says no. So sometimes you're going to allow wrong. Even Thomas Aquinas, who was pro-legalization of prostitution, says not all virtue needs to be mandated, not all vice needs to be prescribed. He doesn't say it's just a function, and he wasn't even talking about subsidiarity there, but he doesn't make it a function of the degree of the evil. He understood in the Catholic tradition that because the 50 state legislatures, even though they're less competent in you know, SJW places like New York or California, where I'm at, they still have the competence to do so. It's the kind of thing that they're competent for regulating, legislating. So don't touch it. And this gets you into Lincolnianism and the Civil War, the 14th Amendment, which is one of the post-Civil War amendments passed in 1868, which destroyed all this subsidiarity. And see, this is really what the post-liberals, guys like Sobremare, come in and they say, oh, well, this is good. You know, you should have a central authority that comes in, destroys everything, takes away all liberty. And they have a Gadsden flag that, like, making fun of liberty. It's like Mary squishing a serpent, which, of course, when it's the devil, I like that. But they're making the joke that the serpent in the American context of the Gadsden flag is actually good in a non-religious way. Don't tread on me. So this is fast becoming, Taylor. You heard it here first. And if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But I'm confident I'm not wrong about this. We have a Germany early 1930s problem, because right-wingers, neither the classical liberals, who are a type of right-winger, nor post-liberals, understand subsidiarity, the proper place.
I'm having a hard time understanding it too, because if I understand correctly, you would support the Supreme Court overturning every court in the United States on abortion and imposing it.
Well, that's a fundamental rights. So, yeah, I mean, there are all these things. That's a fundamental rights issue, life, liberty, property.
So there are times when you can have,
of course,
absolute mandate from the top.
Absolutely. Yeah. When it's prosecuting a foreign war, when it's literally something like, okay, we shouldn't just reverse Roe versus Wade and give it back to the states. That's actually French's answer, I believe, on abortion. It's just reverse it. That would give it back to the states, make it a states' rights issue. That's one of the few issues, and I said they're very few, right, where it should not be a states' rights issue. You know, none of the 50 states should have it legal to you know, kill babies in the womb. As of right now, it's illegal for any of the 50 states to make it illegal to kill babies in the womb. People have to see the connection. This is Lincolnianism. This is what Abe Lincoln did to the country. Everyone thinks like French and Amari, even though they disagree. They agree on this premise. Everything's either coming from the federal government or not at all. Any kind of moral compulsion comes either from the Fed or not at all. It's perverse. It's
anti-subsidiarity. That's just because we live after the Civil War.
It's true. But I mean, my point is this. It might be a little abstract, but when you think that way, then you only tend to think in terms of the federal government should make it legal for the state. If we think of the federal government as greater than the state legislatures, which we should never do,
right?
If we believe in Catholic view of philosophy. Yeah. But if we think that way, then we think the federal government should either do what they did with Roe and make it illegal for any of the states to make it illegal to have abortions, or we should, you know, have the federal government making it illegal. In the case of abortion, it's actually true because it's a fundamental right. But I'm really apprehensive about this. I'm being serious. We joke a lot, but there's not an understanding on the right that the genius of the U.S. Constitution, all the balance, all the delicacy that goes in there, it's a real danger of just looking at it unartfully and understanding that these are Catholic ideas that are wired in there. Subsidiarity is the first principle. The 10th Amendment is the answer that Sobremare should have given to David French when he said, what current structure would enable localities to do this? The police power of the 10th Amendment, it's never been abrogated. It's been ignored. But that's different from a constitutional SCOTUS abrogation. It's been ignored. People need to be in the streets with the fervor of the populists, right? The belly fire, saying, let's return to states' rights on issues like this. That's because yes, it's an important issue, but I mean, the first governor is the parents, and there is one credit to what French said about, like, look, if your parents are going to be exposing you to this, yeah, maybe a state legislature could make it illegal because it's happening at the municipal level. It's a state library or whatever. But if you have abusive parents like this, and this is what these parents are, they're abusive and it's disgusting and vile. I don't know how fervently David French believes that, but he did say it sort of half-heartedly. then they're going to be exposing you to other dangers. Right. And since the family, since the father does own the sons, or whatever Thomas and Aristotle say, not the state, they're going to be exposing you to other forms of perversity. That's the issue. Now, we can stop this one. States can stop this one if you live in the right state, you know. But ultimately, if your parents are this bad, can you imagine having parents that would do this, that would take you and have you twerking in front of a gender dysphoric pervert, you know, that wants to be around your kids in a sexual way? It's vile. Then you're going to be exposed to other things anyway. But conservatives have to get this through their head. It shouldn't come from the Fed. It should come from states. And the states are the ones, because this is all thought through in the late 1780s, that do have the power to legislate morality. The states are by the way, the Bill of Rights, David French kept talking about, this is a First Amendment right. The Bill of Rights wasn't even supposed to constrain the state legislatures, and it didn't until the Civil War. In other words, the Bill of Rights was things that cannot be legislated on by the federal government. So whereas the federal government couldn't violate the First Amendment, speech laws, or establishments of religion, the states were allowed to, and they did. 8 of 13 state legislatures had the things that the Catholic right all wants, establishments of religion. An official establishment of Christianity by 8 of the 13 original states. That was allowed, even though you had something called the First Amendment that made it sound like it wasn't. It was Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion, not the state legislatures. The 14th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution after the Civil War, when everything got all messed up, then said now the 14th Amendment will outlaw. It will apply or incorporate, was the technical term, the Bill of Rights to state legislatures as well. So this threw further out of whack the balance that was supposed to strongly tip the hand to state legislatures over the Congress. The point is, it's Catholic, it's subsidiarity. There is a way to stop this stuff, that's bad stuff, from happening, but you have to do it at the local level. So Amari DM'd me back privately. He's like, but I live in New York, dude. What do I do? I'm like, that's why you move. That's why I'm looking to move. So, and it's that this is liberty, good liberty. It's balanced with order. If a bunch of perverts want to get together in New York. Yeah. And or California and make it legal, then you have to acknowledge you are in the minority there, the ideological worldview minority. They have to have a place to live, right? I mean, the perverts themselves have to. We're not talking about pushing them into the sea. That's not American constitutionalism. Go find people like you, Catholics, that want to make good Catholic laws. So this is why I'm a middle position. I'm not saying never legislate morality. I'm saying do it at the local level. You shouldn't have one size fits all for 350 million people. It's ridiculous. We shouldn't even have there's no such thing as a republic, 350 million people large. That's a whole other problem. But at the very least, it does kind of work as long as you respect the idea of go and get around a bunch of people like you. Your republic is more like your state than the United States of America, right? Your republic is more like your state than your country. And you can make laws that everyone will be happy with. If you go to Wyoming and you're all like, what is this perverse ideology? Let's make it illegal. So the 10th Amendment, the police power, look it up if you don't believe me. It's the absolute way this can and for a while did happen, and it should keep happening, that states have the powers of self-determination. It's not a federal thing. Neither side got this right. It was a big swing and a miss, and I was very disappointed to see it that way. And I this needs to get out there, or else it's just sort of shadow banning the truth, which is what the left does. We're not supposed to do that on the right.
All right. Good. So if you were thinking about taking your kids to Drag Story Hour, probably not a good idea.
Everyone can agree on that. I think even David French agrees.
Wrapping
on
up
that.
With our concluding points here. And the answer is, as it is in the church for reform and in the government, you begin local, subsidiarity. Yep. So with that being said, begin local. You can't get any more local than yourself and your family. Pray the rosary every day. Find the Latin Mass, reclaim the Roman Rite, live your vocation, be a saint. You know, we're just lay people. No one's going to invite us to Rome and say, hey, tell us what to do. Or invite us to DC and say, hey, what should we do here? We got to begin with the tools and the weapons we have. And primarily for us Catholics, those are the spiritual weapons, rosary being number one. So while Tim was talking, I flashed his book, Catholic Republic, up on the screen for more info on that. Of course, pray the rosary every day. And like this video, subscribe to the channel, support on Patreon. I'll send you some books. Also, New St. Thomas Institute, we begin our fall enrollment for priority enrollment today. If you're on the waiting list, you will get an email sometime today, depending on where you are on the waiting list, inviting you to begin that enrollment. So if you're on the waiting list, I don't think there's any more room on the waiting list. So if you're on the waiting list, look for that email today and your opportunity to join and enroll will happen. And thanks for everybody for watching, and pray the rosary. So, all right, Tim, you ready to sign off?
Yeah.
All right. Godspeed, everybody.
Peace out.
Bye.